This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Doctors at McLean Hospital in Belmont say it may no longer be a wait-and-see game when it comes to children and autism. A new study released describes a biological way to test for the disorder using an MRI brain scan that could provide an instant autism diagnosis at an early age. This new method is not in clinical use yet, but doctors say it may someday replace the subjective test that's currently used to diagnose autism. Joining us now to talk about this new test and what it could mean for the treatment of autism is Dr. Nicholas Lang. He's the lead author of the study, and he researches childhood autism at McLean Hospital and Harvard Medical School. Dr. Lang, thanks for coming in the studio.
Thank you, Sasha. It's good to be here.
And you may have heard Dr. Lang on Morning Edition today, and he's now in our studio to take your questions about how autism is diagnosed and treated. In fact, listeners, we're interested in whether someone in your family has been diagnosed as autistic, a sibling, maybe your children, and what it took to get that diagnosis. Whether it was very trial and error, whether it took many years, many painful years. And we want to know what the impact of that diagnosis and the way you got the diagnosis has been on your family. And then conversely, what it may have been like if you got that diagnosis much earlier. Would it have been a relief or would it have been a different kind of burden? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Dr. Lang will also be here to talk about some of the ways that that autism is treated and dealt with when it's diagnosed. So, Dr. Lang, for those who have not heard much yet about your study, tell us first how autism is currently diagnosed.
Yes. First of all, though, I want to mention Dr. Janet Lanehart at the University of Utah, who is the clinician and the PI on this researcher, on this research. A lot of the subjects came from there, and the clinical expertise is there. So I want to acknowledge that wonderful group.
Sure, this study was very much a joint effort.
It's very much of a collaborative effort. So currently, the accepted exam for autism diagnosis involves a structured interview that lasts about 4 hours with the parents and then about a 1 hour observation of the child.
And I imagine this happens only after symptoms begin to emerge.
Yeah, I would think that the parents would be concerned that their child may be exhibiting autistic tendencies and want to get a formal clinical evaluation.
What's the earliest that a child might start exhibiting autistic tendencies?
Well, that seems to be getting younger and younger. Now it's mostly thought that by that test one can diagnose autism as early as 3 years of age and perhaps even 2 years of age.
So basically your child would be at least a toddler probably, and suddenly you might start to think something doesn't seem right and you have to go through this interview. It's a really talking and then is a subjective conclusion made by the doctors that do that interview about whether or not this child might be autistic?
Yes, through a formal scoring system of a behavioral cognitive instrument. There are many such instruments that are used all over medicine, especially psychiatry, to evaluate such disorders.
Can the outcome range quite a bit depending on which doctor does the test, making it quite subjective?
Well, some would think so. Others would say it's pretty repeatable, and the jury is really still out on that. What is important is that it is the most widely use an accepted exam to date. There is a little confusion, controversy about it, but it's fairly reliable, but it is a doctor's call.
So the study you were involved in that was released yesterday in the New England Journal of Medicine, I believe. Autism Research.
That's right.
Correct. It was released in a different journal, in the Journal of Autism Research.
Yes.
And this basically says that there could be a new test that totally replaces that subjective interview process with a biological test involving an MRI brain scan. Can you very quickly explain to us what that test does?
Yes. And I'd say it's a pretty far in the future that it would totally replace.
Which is a key point to remember.
Yeah, I really want to emphasize that it's not ready for the clinic yet. These results are the most promising to date. And we can get back to what needs to take place before it can reach the clinic. But in essence, what we did is we took children and adults with autism from age 7 to 28, and we put them in an MRI scanner that is tuned to be sensitive to the microstructural properties of the wiring of the brain. And this is part often of a routine MRI scan. It only takes about 10 to 12 minutes. And from that, you can get an accurate image. But moreover, you can get accurate, detailed microscopic measurements of the way that our wiring is organized and going in one direction or another or being disorganized, the amount of flow in that system.
So very, very simply put, when you did these MRIs, you found that among children who were believed to have autism, their brains looked different than the children of, than the brains of children who don't have autism.
Yes, in two language and social and emotional areas that we studied. And one in particular called the superior temporal gyrus. It's an area that's been known for a long time to be related with language. The organization of our wiring there is more organized on the left in typical development, but it's less organized on the left in autism. There's a reversal, so it's more organized on the right in autism, but more typically organized on the left in healthy individuals.
And this test might show that, which means that at a much earlier age than we diagnose autism now, we could suddenly realize this child appears to have an autistic brain. Is the hope then, one hope, that you would create drugs that could target that and create a cure or a treatment?
We are in a good position. I think the treatment aspect of it still leads to a lot of intriguing questions that have yet to be answered. But we are in a good position, intermediate between the forces of genetic forces that are influencing the child's brain development and behavior, and then when they come to the clinic and have such symptoms as we talked about, we can look back from this evidence about lack of organization on the left side of the brain, we can look back and locate those genes that are responsible for regulating that.
That's if we can come up with some kind of medication. But right now, autism treatment, there is no drug for it.
There's no effective, overly effective drug for it. It is treated by various antipsychotics. But there's no effective medical treatment for autism at present.
So what do we do? How do we treat people with autism?
Well, it's treated by a very careful management, one-on-one training with the individual to help them with their language and social and emotional skills, intensive treatment as early as we can possibly get it.
If this test you develop ever makes clinical use, it's not that the way we treat autism would change, at least at this point, right? It's just that we might know earlier, but then we would still treat the same way, maybe just start the treatment earlier.
That's very, very possible with this new evidence. And it's all in the genes, Sasha. If we know what the genes are, we can then follow them in development if the lack of insulation in the wiring, you know?
So the more we know and the earlier we know it, the better generally in science.
We learn what autism is. We know how it works, how we can change it, how we can't change it.
Listeners, we're talking about a new study that explains a new possible biologic way to test for autism. So a brain test would show whether a child is autistic, and you could determine that earlier and quickly rather than having to go through a subjective interview process. We have in the studio Dr. Nick Lang, who's the lead researcher on that, and he's here to answer any questions you have about diagnosing or treating autism or what the potential of this test is. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And Dr. Lang, we have a caller from East Boston. This is Rosio. And Rosio, what is your question for Dr. Lang at McLean Hospital?
Yes, my question would be if these diagnoses could be removed somehow, because my son was diagnosed at Ladder's NGH back in 2007 when he was 2.5 years old. He was officially diagnosed with autism, with moderate autism. And so he started early intervention back when he was 20 months old. I caught it quickly. I talked to the pediatrician and I got a quick referral. So we started early intervention with speech therapy, behavioral therapy. But now he's in kindergarten. He's in an inclusion set in a school here in Boston. And he's doing great. He's very smart. He's very social. But he has this odd behavior. Now the school is telling me now that he may have ADHD. They do not believe he may have autism. Is this diagnosis can be, you know, reversed, or maybe they made a misdiagnosis at some point?
Or could a test make a diagnosis more exact than has been the experience of this caller?
Yes, I think this is really the key point that we're trying to make here, is that with some biological basis for the test, in conjunction with the present way that autism is diagnosed, we can get a better picture for the mother, such as yourself, to get some confirmation or ruling it out. So there have been cases where autism has been suspected and then a corrected diagnosis has been another disorder, ataxia or other apraxia, and other developmental disorders like you talked about. But with the biological basis, we could help not place the mother in that position connection necessarily, and we could also have something to point to in the brain that could link it with possible autism.
Although, Dr. Lang, as you were saying earlier, even if we have a test that can diagnose people early and more accurately, right now we don't have a different way to treat those kids, really. Is it just that we can begin treatment a little earlier and target the treatment a little better? Is that one of the limitations here?
Well, we want to generally put this in, test this for younger and younger children. By age three now, as we said, we can get that subjective diagnosis. While the brain is developing, it's differentiating, so we can see the white matter. We can see the wiring of the brain early also. So it's a very good time to get it at two or three after the brain has really had a major exponential differentiation in the wiring and the rest of the part of the brain to put it together with the test that you had at Ladders.
So treating earlier is better because the brain is going through so much growth at that young age for kids.
Yes, and if we know what it is, we can know where to look and we know how to treat it better.
We also have a caller from Acton. This is Betsy. And Betsy, what's your question for Dr. Nick Lang about this new possible way to test autism?
I was just curious if this test at all would help indicate if there were environmental triggers for children who were diagnosed. Will this lend itself to that whatsoever?
So would it help determine the cause, basically? Is that what you're wondering?
Exactly,
okay.
Yes.
Betsy, thanks for that.
That's a very hot topic. It's a controversial topic about what is the contribution of genetic forces and environmental forces. The difficulty is that after the baby comes out of the womb, there's a continuous mixture of those, and it's very hard to separate out the two as the child grows. So it again goes back to the question of how early we can use this test in conjunction. It's in terms of before birth, I think, as I alluded to before, the brain's wiring is not very well differentiated at all. So within the womb, I think there would be very hard to be able to accurately measure the kinds of things that we've measured in this particular test.
We also have a caller from Concord, and this is Hillary. And Hillary, what's your question for Dr. Nick Lang of McLean Hospital about this possible new way to diagnose autism?
Well, I just had a question about whether you had looked into treating autism with diet. I just went to a lecture by Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride. She's written a book called The Gut and Psychology Syndrome, and it's all about healing and sealing the gut. And I was just wondering if you had heard about that or if that was a way that you guys had looked into, is nutritionally dealing with children with autism.
So this is a book that deals with nutritional ways that might improve
or... Sorry, go ahead.
Is this an issue about treating autism with diet?
Yes.
Okay.
This is another very hot and very controversial topic, and there is work in the literature trying to really do well-designed studies to answer these very, very important questions, especially to understand what the mother is or is not doing or what the parents is or are not doing with regard to the environment they're allowing their children to grow in. I know the NIH has come out with studies that have been small sample size and were relatively older, from Dr. Susan Hyman and others there through NIH-sponsored funds. I would say that a lot more well-designed studies with more patients need to be carried out before we can really answer what in diet would or would not be affecting this disorder.
We also have a caller from Hingham, and this is Mark. And Mark, what's your question for Dr. Lang?
Yes, if your study was done in children 7 years of age and older, including adults, how was it applicable to making a diagnosis of autism in very small children who generally aren't going to sit still for a MRI scan without being sedated?
Well, I have also been involved, and that's a very good question. I've also been involved for over a decade in a nationwide study of typical development by MRI, and the babies in that study are 10 days old up to 21 years of age, and we have had no sedation, no problem really with having the baby lie quietly, go to sleep, and be very still enough so there's no movement artifact.
We have another caller. This is a caller who actually has Asperger's, and her name is Nancy, and she lives in Framingham. And Nancy, what was your experience with getting a diagnosis? And let me ask first, is it fair to bring in Asperger's when we're talking about autism? Are we talking about the same spectrum of disorders? So is this fair, Dr. Lang, to make this? Dr. Lang?
Yes, it is. Asperger's syndrome is on the higher end of the spectrum, definitely so.
So Nancy, what has your experience been?
My experience has been certainly in grade school and high school and into my adulthood, and I'm 65 now, one of isolation to the point of scorn.
Isolation to the point of scorn, did you say?
I've been scorned.
Okay.
And it's social isolation. I mentioned the language part of the left side of the brain. It's in my family. It's in the genes. My father had it. He was successful in his own way as an officer and then as a businessman. But as far as the language part of it, as a child, he would put bug in front of words like bug nana.
So Nancy, you said your diagnosis, you just found out recently about this, even though you're in your 60s?
Yes. I found out last year. My nephew has it. My brother, my nephew is now 26. My brother, who does not have Asperger's, realized during the 80s or the early 90s that his son, my nephew, was socially, not all there.
Do you wish you had found out earlier?
I'm diagnosed, and then when I found out about it last year, I accepted it, and I said breaking through to the other side.
And Nancy, do you wish you had found out earlier?
Yes, I did.
Dr. Lang, I think this raises an important point, which is, if we do find out earlier, is that helpful or is that a different kind of burden? And on balance, is it a good thing?
Well, I first want to say, Nancy, I really commend you in calling in and telling us about your personal life situation. One good thing about this study that Dr. Lainhart is also doing is that we're studying atypical development in older individuals with autism, such as yourself. Most of the research focus of to date has been on the younger children to try to find out what it is. But we know nothing about the brain development of older individuals with on the autism spectrum, such as your son and yourself. So I think there are things that we can learn also through the study as we extend in the upper ends of the lifespan.
And Dr. Lang, what do you think the benefits are of families who get a diagnosis earlier? Is it save them? Is it a emotional gain, or is it a different kind of emotional toll?
Well, you can't tell from individual to individual, but I would think that getting some more certainty about the physical basis, the biological basis for the disorder, whether it's there or not, it can rule it out and it can rule it in. So the result of the test may say, well, there may be some behavioral language problems here, but I can tell you with only about 18% chance it's autism. Or otherwise, you can say, well, there's over a 90% chance that your child, this individual, does have autism.
It takes away a lot of the wondering.
Wondering, and then regardless, you're going to follow that child and give them the best help that you can give.
One quick final question from a caller in Taunton. This is Amy. And Amy, what's your question for Dr. Lang about this new possible way to test for autism?
Hi, I was just wondering, since autism is a spectrum disorder and since it does have such a wide variety of symptoms, I was wondering if the testing in any way would be able to take those symptoms and create new diagnoses for them rather than just blanketing the disorder as an autism spectrum disorder.
So could the test let us be more specific about where on the autism spectrum a person falls?
Exactly. Instead of just blanketing all of the children with the autism spectrum disorder, taking those sets of symptoms that they have maybe at one end of the spectrum or the other end of the spectrum and creating new diagnoses.
Great. Thanks for that. Dr. Lang?
Yes, what she's referring to is a new version of the DSM-5 criterion. This is a diagnostic statistical manual, which is intending to do as the caller says. Just call it the blank autism spectrum disorders. But I want to make clear that that does not at all remove the heterogeneity, the variety of the spectrum of the disorder in many, many different individuals. That is often misunderstanding about what this inclusive label is. I'm sorry to even use the word label because we don't label individuals. Every person is unique. And in particular, people with Asperger's syndrome they're proud that they have Asperger's syndrome, and as opposed to someone who said, well, I'm PDD-NOS. I mean, so part of it, it's to simplify it in one way, but never at all marginalize the variety on the individual basis.
Dr. Nick Lang, thank you very much for coming in the studio and talking about this.
You're very welcome, Sasha. Thank you.
Dr. Nicholas Lang is the lead author of a new study that has described a possible new way to test for autism in a way that would be biological and not so subjective as it is now. He also researches childhood autism at McLean Hospital and Harvard Medical School. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
One note, we mentioned on WBUR earlier today that we'd be talking about a new proposal to build multi-university graduate student housing in Downtown Crossing. We also teased a segment about the Boston Camerata's new holiday performance. Well, the news business and live radio being what they are, we've had to reschedule both of those. We will have some great music from the Camerata for you tomorrow, and on Monday, we'll talk to Northeastern professor Barry Bluestone about his plan to ease Boston's college housing crunch and its brain drain all at once. We hope you'll join us then. Coming up on today's show, Boston Globe arts reporter Jeff Edgers will tell us about the tough financial situation facing the Longy School of Music in Cambridge, and he'll tell us his top picks for arts events this weekend. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.